Welcome to Financial Repression Authority's Roundtable Insight, where the best fund managers, economists, and industry leaders discuss the key investment issues and challenges in the current macroeconomic environment.
Hi, welcome to FRA's Roundtable Insight. This is Richard Benulli. Today we have Ira Harris. He's independent floor trader, successful hedge fund manager, global macro consultant, trading foreign currencies, bonds, commodities, and equities for over 40 years. He was also a CME director from 1997 to 2003. Welcome, Ira.
Thank you, Richard. Good to be back with you. It's been a while.
Great. Let's thought today we'd do a discussion on the to start off with Janet Yellen's presentation and her statements. Your thoughts?
Well, I thought just what I thought the conference would be. It's her last one. Of course, as usual, she handled herself well. She discussed some certain issues, but didn't give much away. And more importantly, didn't trap her successor, Jay Powell, into any type of situation. So I thought, she has been gracious and thoughtful. She's certainly been all of that. So she continued in that vein. Didn't really tell us much. Again, struggling to understand the lack of inflation. That'll continue to plague her because they just truly don't understand where is the inflation as they measure it. Let me preface that, because if we had Peter Bookfire, he would say, and so again, as the Fed measures it, because that's all we have to go on is the way they measure it. How any of the rest of us measure it at this point in time really is meaningless, because we're not driving the markets in that regard.
Did she set any expectations for future interest rate hikes?
I'm not sure. Maybe a couple. She was, kind of reticent. But, she falls into the trap, to me. I heard media economists talking about it today that, Greenspan understood with the technological innovation going back to 1996, so he thought it was going to have an impact on, a supply enhanced growth period. So he was reticent to raise interest rates, and that was a good thing. But every Austrian economist I know worth their weight, and those who are not in the neo-Keynesian new model, would tell you that was exactly that caused all the problems, was that Greenspan was reticent to raise rates, even though the return on capital was rising significantly. And that's when you need to start raising rates, because, of course, then you head off any type of excess, capacity developments, which, of course, we saw by 1997, 1998, we had massive excess capacity, overcapacity situation that started the Asian contagion. So, she's kind of saddled with this, too, because she talked about that, with the tax cut, and she actually talked more about fiscal policy today, which was good, not in any type of derogatory way, but she's worried about maybe the increase in debt, but she's hoping that if this tax cut is stimulative, that it'll be a supply side, meaning we'll get greater productivity growth, which she said would be the good type of growth that you'd want. So, but there it is again. So we'll see.
And what about the U.S. yield curve? Do you see continued flattening of the yield curve or potential inversion going into next year?
Well, again, they tried to pin her on that in the inversion. Now, I'm telling you that people have to be specific. So when I'm using the 210, and when the 210 inverts, there's danger ahead for a lot of asset classes. That's just, now people say, not so. I'll be the first one to tell you, because I've looked at this for 35 years as part of my trading paradigm that I developed for myself. And I can't time it. I have a study here that was done in 2003. It's right here. I keep it in my drawer. I'm exactly on this. It was done by an intern of mine who was very highly qualified, and it was titled, she wrote it in July of 2004, An Investigation of the Relationship Between Changes in the Yield Curve and the Performance of Stock Indices. So we've looked at this, and it's so difficult to time. I can't tell you when the result's going to be, but I'm going to tell you, just like in 2007, when the yield curve inverted, it was only by 6 basis points. We know what followed. 2000, the yield curve inverted. We know what happened then. In 1979 to 1981, of course, that was a forced inversion by Volcker as he was wringing inflation out of the system. But we know what happened then. So, yes, this is what it tells us. This time, I can't tell you. You know, we've discussed this, you and I, for quite a while. We've been right in many ways about it. And I've warned, with what the central banks are doing, this is a wild card. I can't tell you what the impact is going to be. And I can't tell you, but I'm more prone. It was interesting when Yellen discussed the yield curve today, she didn't talk about the effects from other central banks. And I think that's a huge part of the flattening that's going on.
Yes, and what about that? Do you see the ECB, Bank of England, and Bank of Japan, having their yield curves affected?
The Bank of Japan told us, you know, Kuroda tried to give us a different spin on it, thinking that maybe they're going to put an end to it. But as soon as the dollar yen softened off of that, I forgot what the exact phrase was. It was from a speech in Switzerland in mid-November. He used certain language, which kind of spooked the market, but then he walked it back, of course. And you see we're in, although dollar yen got weak today, based on the dollar really fell off after the Fed action. But there's... Listen, tomorrow we have an ECB meeting, an SNB meeting, a Bank of England meeting, okay. Bank of Mexico.
Yeah.
I mean, they're all in play here. Oh, Kuroda's term that he used in November was the reversal rate. It was a new term. We hadn't heard it. So myself included, I thought, maybe they're thinking about ways that they can finally start to get out of this. But then he walked that back. They're not going anywhere. And as I was talking with Rick Santelli today, I wasn't on TV with him, but I had a tea and he had a cup of coffee where we were just kind of talking about that. And you know what? It's different. The Bank of, unlike the U.S., when the U.S. started down the path of tapering, when Bernanke, you know, stopped being afraid of his own shadow and stopped being, plagued by the taper tantrum, when they actually announced how they were going to do it, it was a monthly reduction in the amount of debt they were going to purchase, and they were going to end it over basically, let's say, a year. It was less than a year. Well, let's say that, because they went from $85 billion to zero, where they weren't purchasing any new stuff in a fairly quick period, but the market knew what they were going to do. The ECB is totally different. We know that they're cutting from $60 billion to $30 billion starting January 1st. But they're not reducing it after that. So Draghi's going to be buying $30 billion instead of $60, but he's going to extend. He already told us he's extending it out to September. So we know we're going to get $270 billion new buying with whatever else they're buying in Europe all next year. And the Bank of Japan hasn't moved whatsoever. Although he does have some latitude there because of the yield curve control. But there's no change coming. I think Draghi has a very grave problem on his hands. And you saw it today in the Italian bonds. They actually got hit,
yeah,
even with whatever they're buying, because now we know there's going to be an Italian election on March 4th. And this is going to be a very contentious election, because right now the polls have the Lombard party or the Northern League and Five Star leading. So this market now knows there's an election coming. But more importantly for Draghi is Merkel. And Richard, you and I talked about it. We talked about this before the election,
mm-hmm,
that she was not going to be as strong And she's not. And she's very weakened right now.
Yeah.
And the German elites, the nomenclature, the thinkers, are so afraid of a new election. Well, meanwhile, it's 3 months on almost from the election, and no governments, no new governments been formed yet. It's a caretaker government. And Merkel, of course, offered, because she was pressured to do so, to offer the SPD, the Social Democrats, who swore that they weren't going to go into coalition. Now they're negotiating for a coalition, but she's phenomenally weakened. And this is a very important thing for Draghi, because she's been his bodyguard. She, and whatever he's wanted to do, Merkel was willing to deflect criticism. So now that she's in such a weakened state and they don't know where they're going with the Italian elections, he's in no position to do any more tightening. It doesn't matter. Or any more hawkish statements. So I'm looking for tomorrow to be excessively dovish.
I see. Any updates on the gold currency cross exchange rates? You've written recently about that, gold being under strain from positive real yields.
Well, you know what? We're not, right now the 2-year yields dropped a little bit today. You know, so we're about neutral right now using the 2-year on inflation, and real yields are probably about zero. But global real yields are exceedingly negative. So is gold, that's why I say gold will perform well against all currencies, because global short-term yields are very negative. U.S. are neutral. But the interesting thing is that the dollar is not getting a bit. This defies, most things that anybody who has looked at this and traded on it and analyzed it. When the United States dollar should be screaming right now based on what we saw during the Reagan years, because everybody likes to compare the Reagan years, because you're getting a fiscal stimulus package via tax reform or tax whatever, and rising interest rates. These are two variables that are very positive a currency, and yet nothing. And this is really starting to get interesting and forcing me to think what may be coming down the pike here, because something is wrong here.
And today Yellen made some statements about Bitcoin. Everybody's talking about Bitcoin. She mentions it's not legal tender. Your thoughts?
Well, it's not legal tender by the definition of legal tender. We've talked about Bitcoin before. Again, I'm far more interested. I'm on record for over a year saying I'm more interested in the blockchain technology and the concept of it than I am Bitcoin, to my own detriment. But I'm with guys like Druckenmiller and Gunla. I can only trade what I understand. I lived through the dot-com bubble, and I was not long dot-coms because I couldn't understand them. I didn't understand when people talk about burn rates of money. And that, my common response was, I'm a middle class. I'm a child of middle class parents. We don't burn money.
Yeah,
so you're going to have to help me better with this.
Okay.
So I'm watching it. It's intriguing, and I wonder whether it affects gold. Some people think it affects gold because it's moved potential gold buyers into another alternative. But as I wrote last week, hell has frozen over when I find myself in agreement with Alan Greenspan, because Greenspan's comment was, hey, he just didn't understand it, and you can't create value out of nothing. Mm-hmm. Can't create value out of nothing. Now, I know tech people will tell me, it's not nothing. There's a process here, and we could probably find it in David Ricardo's, labor theory of value. Okay, because you got to mine this. So there is some value, but it's okay. It's going on, but I happen to agree with Greenspan about that. You just can't create value out of nothing. Although I would have asked him a question, then of course that makes the Swiss franc the oldest cryptocurrency in the world because it's so secretive. So if that's the definition of crypto, secretive and basically flying under the radar screen, and so they've been doing this for a long time, and we've watched them for 3 years create value out of nothing by keep printing Swiss francs. So I'm voting as the Swiss franc for the cryptocurrency of the year. And if you actually look at the SNB stock price, it almost mirrors that of Bitcoin. It's had such a dramatic rise this year.
Do you think that a government-based digital currencies or cryptocurrencies, if we can call it that, will allow private-based cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin and others to coexist?
I can't. I really can't answer that. And as Janet Yellen, she was very good in her answer. She says, look at, because somebody asked her, is the Fed looking at this? She says, other central banks are, you know, when we say looking at it, are people doing research? Yes. But we're looking at digitized money, not cryptocurrencies. And there's a big difference. And she was very good at explaining that difference. And I think you are going to get digitized currencies. Why? Because people like Larry Summers and others have wanted to get Rogoff.
Rogoff.
They would like to get electronic money because then they would have greater control over what you and I do. So when they go to financial repression, mm-hmm. rather than us pulling our money out of the system and hoarding it, they would force us to have electronic currency, which they could control. They would control what we do. So then they would hope they could really store velocity to the money, you know, which is why, you know, Larry Summers, let's get rid of the $100 bill because it's much harder to hoard currencies of smaller denominations because if you're hiding them in your mattress, it doesn't take that much money to give you sleepless nights because you can only hold so much currency in smaller denominations.
And to allow for more easy implementation of negative interest rates through monetary policy.
Yeah, Marvin Goodfriend, you know, who's been nominated to be governor, who's written fairly extensively on negative interest rates. That's right, because that's the whole thing. I can go to negative interest rates, and I'm going to force you to keep your money in the system rather than anybody with a brain says, negative interest rates? I'm going to pull all my money out of the bank. I'm not, because if you go to negative interest rates for 10 years and we're at negative 2%, I'm going to lose 20% of the value of my currency. So then people pull it out of the bank and they do other things with it, meaning gold and other things. So it gets very interesting now.
Exactly. just wondering your thoughts, update on the geopolitical scene. In terms of Saudi Arabia and Russia, what's happening in Saudi Arabia, and any new developments on meetings and more discussions, between Saudi Arabia and Russia?
Well, you know, Richard, that I've looked at this for quite a while, and I stated, I think last time we were on, that there was a major event that took place on October 4th. That's when the Saudi king, not the crown prince, not Mohammed bin Salman, but the king himself went to Russia. First time ever. I'm always interested in events that are first time evers because there's always a reason why they're first time evers happen. And you better take notice. Nixon going to China. That was an amazing event. So the king went to Russia. Now, oil on those 2 days he was there, you know, traded down to about, let's see, what am I looking at here? About $49. $49. And then over the next 8 weeks, we've gone all the way up to almost $60. Is this happenstance? Yeah, I don't think so. I think that major shifts are taking place in the world. And we're seeing it in the Middle East. And Russia is very involved with this because, you know, the Obama administration let them into a bigger role in Syria, which is now giving them the primary role. So there's all types of things that are taking place here. There are shifting sands, no pun intended. And we have to pay attention to them.
Wow, great insight, Ira, as always. How can our listeners learn more about your work?
You can go to Ira Harris, YRAHARRIS.com, And when Notes from Underground, which is where I blog, will pop up, and they can follow me, they can register to receive it for the, you know, very expensive price of free.
Okay.
Yeah. And there's, you know, and I don't tout trades to people. I try to explain to you where I think the next opportunities are going to be from a trader's, because I have to always wear two hats as a trader and as an investor.
Yes.
They are radically different.
Yeah. Well, great. Thank you very much, Ira, for being on the program show again. Thank you.
Well, you know, Richard, in this time we're in, I hope I was able to, quote unquote, shed some light.
Okay. Thank you, Ira.
The FRA Roundtable Insight Show is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the show each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Any discussions among the panel participants or responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the panel participants and do not take into consideration the listener's suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Please be advised that you invest or speculate at your own risk.